Accession number 24195, reel 3.
Mr. Luff, reel 3. Now, so what exactly were you learning? As let's take the two things one at a time. What community? Let's take a sight setter first. So what exactly was your job on a 3-inch gun?
I was a communications number, which meant I carried headphones all the time. All the orders to the gun came through me. I would close up the gun, and they would give me the range. I would set the range. I would then, when ready to fire, I'd give the order fire, the initial order, and then after that, as the gun was loaded, I would tap the ladder on the shoulder and let him know it was loaded, and that's how you went about it. You would get the range, fall a shot, and then they would say either up 400, down 400, and whatever, and they'd straddle the target, then they'd say salvos, so you salvo. And away you went. You fired till you stopped.
Now, so when you were communications number, you weren't acting as sight setter as well?
Yeah, oh yeah.
You were as well. So what did you do as sight setter?
I had two little gears. One for range, one for
dials.
Distance. Two dials, yeah. One for distance and one for trajectory, like, you know. And I went from one to the other. Up 400, down 400. That meant farther the shot, or they give you the range where it was, you was firing red 90, you put it on the what's name, the sight swung round and the lad just automatically see where he's going. I was shifting his sights all the time, basically, that's all. And when he knew I had tapped him on the shoulder, he knew he was firing. And so I was the busiest one on the gun, really, and I was the youngest and the busiest.
Now, what did you think of the 3-inch gun at the time?
Well, I never knew much about guns, but it used to have a sharp crack. And you had, we was A gun, which is the lowest gun, the most forward. You had B gun above your head. And if you was firing ahead, you used to shudder, because there's no sense in wearing it. We never wore tin helmets, because it'd blow the helmet in your head off, probably, the blast. And I used to get lost in that type of area. You were so well trained, you used to all the shouting, and old Trader Horn, which is a nickname for, I forget his name, but we've always called him Trader. He was captain of our gun, leading Seaman Hall, and he was as good as gold, come from Reading, and fought the world of him. Lovely bloke. Proper farmer, he seemed, but he was a real right seaman. And
what was so good about him?
Genial, with a lovely attitude. He could be funny. He always put blokes in their place, but he was a very genial, look after you, kept his eye on you. And we had a couple like that. We had Chesil, who was the, not the lad, the trainer. He was leading seaman trouble. There were three RN types, regular Matlows, on us. Chesil, Bishop, and what's the name on our gun?
Horn.
Hey?
Chesil, Bishop, and Horn, were they?
Trader Horn, yeah. Chesil, Bishop, Trader Horn, yeah. Then Bishop come from Newbury. Good lightweight boxer, very good. And I used to be his mate for years. They called me his winger. He taught me everything he knew about seamanship. He was in for the war, and his father owned a pub at Newbury. He went home once on leave and shot his dog. Yeah, and I found him drunk outside Euston Station, waiting for the train, 10 to 5 train. "What's the matter, Bish?" He said. "Oh," he said, "I took the old man's dog out." He said, "Yesterday morning," he said, "it ran across the sights of the what's name." He said, "I shot it." He said, "His favourite dog." He said, "If he'd got the gun, he'd have shot me." But that's how it was. And old Bishop's broken up about it. But we used to catch 10 to 5 from Euston to Stroud Ray. We only got 5 days
left. I'll come to Lee. What about the petty officers? What were they like?
Dickie Bird was a seaman. That's the best thing I can say about him. A seaman who liked to drink. The chief petty officer came from East Ham. Chief Coxon, I should say. He was a bit of a martinet. He looked more and worse than what he was, but seeing as I come from East Ham, I was all right with him. I used to be in relief films from now and again. I used to get into everything. He was good. He'd always teach you. Who else? That was the two main ones. Oh, there was another petty officer on midships. He nearly blew his finger off once, trying to make a cigarette lighter out of Oregon shell.
Now, what about the lower deck, so to speak, your mates? Were there any particular pals you'd like to tell us about then? I mean, we're talking about early days now. I mean, before we really get into action, what impression? How did you settle down together in the mess deck?
Me and Bishop. Bishop liked me, I liked him. We had drinks together, sure. He was about 23 to my 19, to my 17, 18. And that was a natural thing in the Navy. If I was younger than them, I was a winger, like, you know. And Jim Douglas, who was the gunner, not a gunner, he looked after all the ordnance artificer. And he was a leading hand.
But what about the ordinary lads, the ones who didn't have a rank, like yourself?
Oh, like myself.
Ordinary seaman, leading seaman.
Wilson.
How'd you get on with them all?
All of them. My particular mates, Bishop was an ordinary naval seaman then, and we used to go out together. We was all good mates. Bill Bedborough, another one, played football for Middlesbrough. You know, the Manchester United player, what was his name? Oh, my God. Went to Australia afterwards. Played with Manchester United off at, I'll tell you his name anyhow. Me and Def Seaman Holiday, I called out to him and he came back from Portsmouth. We was on our honeymoon, 51. And he went on leave and then come back again. Yeah, that's a boy. Well-known footballer.
It'll come back to you.
Yeah, and it was him. And we was all good mates, basically. The man who kept us in line was Chesil, 6'2", hard muscle, boat builder from the Isle of Wight. And he'd clump you, he'd kick your arse, he'd do anything to keep you in line. And all he got out of him was bloody HOs, hostilities only like them, bloody HOs. But I got my own back on him. I was coming down from a bridge, I'd done my session of lookout hour. And as I come down, Chesil's round the back of the flag deck, sitting on a flag locker. And I looked at him. He was green as grass. He had a coat buttoned right up to the neck. And I said, "All right, Ches, you know, get out of it," he said. So I wouldn't get out of it. I knew what was happening. And "Get out of it," he said. I said, "What's the matter, Ches? Want me to get you anything?" And he started eating, and he was hanging over. I could have tipped him over, and no one ever seen him again. And he said, "Have you ever tell?" Because he was the seaman amongst all of us. Sorry, he never got sick. And "If ever you say anything down here," he said, "I'll kill you." Anyway, big mouth me. I went down. I got hold of Buckman. Buckman was my particular friend. I still write to. But I said, "Nip up and on just below the bridge." I said, "You'll see Chesil sitting on a locker." I said, "Just make yourself a nuisance." But what Buck done, he took another three blokes with him. And they took the mickey out because he couldn't hold himself. Poor old Ches was heaving all over the place. It wasn't his regular thing, but he just that day he was sick and he was green. Anyway, next time we got to the gun, Chesil's grabbed hold of me. I fitted in the breech cover like a hammock. And he hung me up on the guardrails and he punched me every 5 minutes for 4 hours. Well, for a few hours anyway. And as he come by, "You do that again to me," he said. You've done me harm," he kept saying. "You rotten little son." Oh, he called me everything.
That's leading seaman Chesil.
Yeah, company Isle of Wight, boat builder. But a lovely bloke really, but he just said that way about him. He couldn't, he didn't like layabouts and anything like that. He kept you in line. Bloody HOs, Luffy. Bloody HOs. How you ever got in the Navy, I'll never know. and all that lot.
Now, what about the officers? What officers do
officers,
you remember?
I cleaned the cabin. I got myself another 50 bob a week off each of them for Wrightson. Thornton, who was a midshipman when he first came aboard, he finished up a sub-lieutenant. But I got on well with the two of them. I used to clean their cabin. That was my first duty of the day.
Well, tell us about the cleaning the cabin then.
I used to go in, take an Uber to his cabin, and change his blankets when needed, do everything appertaining to cleanliness. And
you'd volunteered for that, had you, for the extra pay?
Oh. Yeah, they asked for anyone but do it, a servant, the officer's servant. So that was my job before I started working the Gunners' Party. I used to be Gunners' Party. My job was basically to look after...
Stick to the officers. Was that all you had to do as officer's servant?
Yes, that's what I had to do.
You didn't have to do anything else and prepare
for... No, see his laundry, see everything, yeah. That, as far as personal cleanliness was concerned. I just bundled up his laundry and given to the steward. Like, you know, he done all that. I never manoeuvred his... But I cleaned his cabin, cleaned the rugs, made his bunks, and made his bunk, and that's it. Him, I made Wrightson's, bloke from Wembley. He was a nice bloke.
And you got paid extra for that?
I got paid. They used to slip me £1.50 each of them, like, you know. And down again, wherever they was well off, I was well off. They used to see I had enough money. And I was all pleased because I was only getting 14 shillings a week. That was my way.
Now, can you run through some of the officers in the early days, what they were like?
We had, starting with the captain, who was about 5 foot, very small but a very loud voice.
What was his name?
Reeves Brown.
What was he like?
He wanted you to think he was hard. But if you... A couple of times I was got to over 2 years, like you do get to know him, and I helped clean his cabin out with his servant a couple of times, and he would stop and say a few words to you, and what are you doing, laughing and all this like. I remember when we went for AB, now he put me back to December.
Hang on, no, because that's running on a bit, but what was he like, you know, that's what more...
Genial, like, but strict. Very strict at times. He was a survivor of one of the big battle wagons. And
did he know his stuff? I mean, did the men have confidence in him as a captain?
He couldn't, to begin with, he couldn't bring the ship alongside anywhere else without trouble. Rather, the wind took us off and made himself look a fool a couple of times. But then he got to know every wrinkle of it. Like, we went alongside the Whittaker when she blew in half. Another thing, he really knew his business.
So he learned his stuff.
He was only a lieutenant when he first started.
And what about? So he'd be a commander, a lieutenant commander.
Lieutenant commander.
And what about the first lieutenant? Do you remember who that was?
Yeah, Anthony Anzac Terry, Australian. The funniest.
So
man.
Anthony Terry, Anzac was his nickname, was it?
Yeah. No, I don't know about that, but that's how we knew him as Anthony Anzac Terry. He was chubby, round-featured, and a laugh. He was funny. And he never had no side, he'd lovely. He'd seen me catch a fish once, come over the breakwater. Shall I tell you it? I was cleaning A-gun, as usual, every morning, greasing up, and all the points and that. And all of a sudden, I heard a flopping. It was pretty medium weather, flopping about. And I looked over the edge of the gun pit, and it was a big brown fish, golden fish, caught in a breakwater. Jumped over, got hold of the fish. And thought, right, Bishop see me. He said, Jim, he said, take it down to Sam. He said, we didn't used to get fresh fish. He said, take it down to Sam. He said, and asked him to split it free. Plenty out of three of us. So I nipped down the galley, which was only just below the bridge. I got in the galley, said to Sam, yeah, Sam. Me, you and Bishop tonight. Lovely, he said. And all of a sudden, there was a hand on my shoulder. First Lieutenant, Anthony Anzac Terry. Luff, that will make you sick, he said. You can't have that, he said. You pick the best bit of steak you've got. What Sam's got, he said, you can have that. I said, there's three of us, sir. I said, we're going to go. He said, you can have 3 bits of steak. He said, but you're not having that fish. And he took it off me. Wouldn't let me have it. That was the tale of him.
That went to the officer's mess,
yeah, I presume. The officer's mess. But he was a lovely man, because we used to take the boats. We were at Mile Water Base, and we used to take the boat's crew away. I was the helmsman.
I'll come back to that a bit, because that's another job I want to talk about. What about the other officers? Was Darcy on when you started?
Yeah, Darcy was...
What was he, navigation or...
Sub-lieutenant. He wasn't navigation. He wasn't a navigator. Probably helped, but he was always on the bridge with Mock. That was another senior lieutenant.
Now, take Darcy first. His first name was...
Michael.
And what was he like? Because he's still going, and we're probably going to go and see him soon. But what was he like then as a young sub-lieutenant?
Good sense of humour, a gentleman. That's the only way I can describe Mike. He was genial. You'd see the funny side of him on the bridge. For instance, I used to pride myself on spotting him, and him and Mock used to be on the bridge. Mock was a senior. And I had very keen eyesight, even though I do say it myself. And I was a starboard lookout, and I spotted an aircraft right out in the mist circling us, and aircraft bearing green 90 angle of sight, 10 or 12, whatever, and on the sea. And I said, "Liberator, sir." And Mock said, "Laugh." He said, "I can just see the plane, and no way can you distinguish that." I said, "Liberator, sir," and left it at that. So the plane come round again, right circled the convoy on it. She come closer. Aircraft bearing red 90, so-and-so, angle of sight, so-and-so. "Liberator, sir." And all of a sudden, Mock, "Apologies, Luff." He said, "You must have bloody good eyes." So that's the only nearest I got to him. He was off the Cossack, a famous destroyer. And he was handsome, ugly. He looked as if he could wrestle with beer, but there was something about him which the women loved. He had more friends after him than anyone. He was a lovely bloke, but good characters.
Now, let's step back a bit, because we just had a look at some of the characters just to set up the ship. But you joined the ship, and the first bit you were helping a bit of welding work. How did you settle, and what else were you doing when you first joined her in Boston?
Well, we took her out for trials. And
tell us about the sea trials. What were they like?
Sea trials off Cape Cod. And we had a good grounding of RM men to keep us youngins in the line, like, you know, and... like Chesil, Bishop and all that, they knew their stuff. And we just rode along with them. And we done depth charge, attacks, everything going. But that went on, and from there, we finished up in Key West. We went down to Florida, Key West. Never done a lot there. Then went to Bermuda. In Bermuda, it was a Lee Slim base, and they had a whole seashore covered with guns, including 3-inch, which for a fortnight we played about with these guns, and beautiful weather. It was November. And we was there for that time. I never even went ashore in Hamilton, come to think of it.
Now, what sort of thing, you were particularly learning the guns there, were you, as a gunnery party?
Yeah.
Well, what do you remember about your gunnery training there? What did they actually put you through?
But you take your position, you get your earphones on, and you repeated everything they told you, and made sure you knew it was all about. Matter of fact,
Did you do other guns other than the 3-inch?
No, 3-inch was the only one, but we did have Oerlikons. We had 1, 2, 3, about 9 Oerlikons.
Were you trained on them as well?
No.
So you were just 3-inch man?
3-inch, yeah. And Hedgehog. Crew. We had 24 spigots behind the gun.
And were you on that as well?
Yeah, I was a loader for Hedgehog.
Tell us about that then.
That was 24 spigots weighing 40, the bombs weighed 43 pounds each. I had 12, my mate had 12, and we loaded them. And Trader was in charge of that as well, and just said, withdraw pins, you took the pin out. Leaving a free propeller, and they was fired right over the forecastle, about 100 foot in the air. They on contact, they exploded, and that was the tale of the Hedgehog. But needless to say...
Where were they stored, the bombs?
I'll tell you about the store. Just below the foreign domestic, in front of the foreign domestic, below the guns, actually. And they did break free once. And I remember Froggy French and that trying to get down there, and we had 43-pound bombers flying about. Anyway, I know it's big editing, but I suggested get the mattress, get the hammocks. And so we got all our hammocks and stuffed it full of hammocks before anyone could get down and get injured. And I know Froggy said to me, that's a bloody good idea, Loughlin. I said, yeah, until I couldn't get down there, down that ladder. And we got all the hammocks and whatever bedding we could and just packed it full up so gradually you could stop everything rolling about. And that was a big bomb, 43-pound. And when they used to, actually, we never used them all that much. People didn't like using them because they was known to blow off the forecastle. They had been known.
Misfires?
Misfires, yeah. But, you know, just they only had a misfire and fall short, they'd blow your forecastle right off. And they had happened. So you were very dubious about firing them. How skipper was, anyway.
Now, what other training did you have? Did you have an abandoned ship exercise?
We had all that, yeah. Abandoned ship, yeah.
What happened in that?
You made your stations, basically, and it was all sixes and sevens, really, because no way was you going to get off in a boat. You only had a cutter and a whaler. The rest was dinghies and... you know, blown up dinghies, all
Carly
floats, yeah.
Did they actually, because in the early days they used to actually go over the side during the abandoned ship exercise, did you do that or did you just sort of stand at
the
station?
I've been over the side and told to swim around the ship, and we used to always wherever you went you wore your life jacket with a light on it, we had a light on there, but this time, if I remember rightly, we did swim around without the life jacket, so the skipper made us swim. And we swam round as far as we could anyway. I got round because I'm no much of a what's saying. Well, but that's how you performed. And there's always something going on. It's like masthead, look at it. Not blokes won't go up mast, you know. I took to the mast as easy as me.
Tell us what you did as masthead lookout then.
You went up the ladder alongside the mast. And then got above the crow's nest and then dropped into it, which was about 80 foot level, I would say. But a lot of blokes wasn't in love with it. There was one signaller who used to bloody knife faint to come up, and he used to hold on, he said, Jim, 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 he's got a free signal. He said, Jim, do you mind? I said, I'll let him get permission. He used to phone down Darcy, could I go out and free the signal? And he used to do that. Don't forget his name, little white head. He used to so full of himself. Oh, thanks. He said, I've never done that. You used to get in the stirrups, you know, you got used to these things. And just love it. But when you were like that, like I was, and Buckman, he was my right arm man, me and Buck, come from outside Guildford.
So what would you actually do when you were on Crow's Nest? I mean, what?
You kept the glasses trained on the horizon.
So you had a set of binoculars.
Yeah.
And did you have a method of going round? I mean, were you doing the full 360, or did you divide it up into bits, or how did you?
I used to just take as it come. Like I'd be concentrate on one part, and then just gradually swing round and keep in that position 5 minutes might be, and that's how you pick things up by keep looking. And you might get a glint. I picked a bloke's ball head up once through that, just see the wassail, and I reported it down below, and they made the walls it, and it turned out to be a German airman with his bald head.
So you wouldn't sort of make sure you went right round the three...
In time you would. You would go all the way round. You'd no one else to do it. The lookouts, port and starboard, you had them, but... You being up high, you had more chance of seeing it.
So you'd sort of do the... You would go right around, but you'd also pick a bit you were going to do.
And you'd keep... it was a slow process. Like, it wouldn't... It was slow. You was there, and you looked and steadied yourself, and you was also looking in the air.
How long would you be up there for?
Hour.
Did it strain your eyes for eyes for an hour, or was it all right?
Really? No, not in them times. I was well relaxed up there. Peter, I never had a seat in them, to tell the truth. But you had to stand all the time. I used to have my elbows stuck on the side there. But no problem at all. Fortunately, as I say, I was second nature.
Now, what about bridge lookout? Because you did that as well.
Actually, what happened, I was the communication on A-gun. I never done lookout. But to keep a set of headphones on you for 4 hours, I asked permission, and it was granted. I said, can I have a break? At least let me go lookout for an hour. And we had to ask, because you had to have a second number, might have been Buckman. He was a loader. And trained him up a bit, and when I used to go lookout, he used to have the headphones on.
So what would you do, what was the difference on bridge lookout?
Bridge lookout, you only do the one area, 90 degrees from forward to aft. No, 180 degrees. Yeah, 360 all the way around, 180. And, yeah, the same. You used to have the angle of sight, like, you know.
So you'd report direct to the officer of the watch?
Oh, you'd call out, you had to shout. As soon as you said, you shouted. And I had a good voice for shouting. And that was it. It was quite interesting, like, if you was that way inclined. I used to love to see it in every weather. I used to like to see the spray coming over the forecastle, and you were dipping, you could see the next ship. Well, 1 minute you'd see the top of the mast, the next clip you see the all of the ship. And we used to, mainly, we used to be line abreast, doing a sweep.